5, chapter 17, entitled The Descent of the River Ganges. This is text number 15 and 16. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So as you know, these verses are a bit difficult to chant in any meter, so we'll just read the translation. Translation, text number 15. Shukadev Goswami said, in the tract of land known as Ilavrita Varsha, the only male person is Lord Shiva, the most powerful demigod. Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, does not like any men to enter that land. If any foolish man dares do so, she immediately turns him into a woman. I shall explain this later in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Text number 16. In Ilavrita Varsha, Lord Shiva is always encircled by 10 billion maidservants of Goddess Durga, who minister to him. The quadruple expansion of the Supreme Lord is composed of Vasudeva, Pradumna, Aniruddha, Shankarshan. Shankarshan, the fourth expansion, is certainly transcendental. But because his activities of destruction in the material world are in the mode of ignorance, he is known as Tamasi, the Lord's form in the mode of ignorance. Lord Shiva knows that Shankarshan is the original cause of his own existence, and thus he always meditates upon him in trance by chanting the following mantra. Purport. Sometimes we see a picture of Lord Shiva engaged in meditation. This verse explains that Lord Shiva is always meditating upon Lord Shankarshan in trance. Lord Shiva is in charge of the destruction of the material world. Lord Brahma creates the material world, Lord Shiva maintains it, and Lord Shiva destroys it. Because destruction is in the mode of ignorance, Lord Shiva and his worshipable deity, Shankarshan, are technically called Tamasi. Lord Shiva is the incarnation of Tamogun. Since both Lord Shiva and Shankarshan are always enlightened and situated in the transcendental position, they have nothing to do with the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance. But because their activities involve them with the mode of ignorance, they are sometimes called Tamasi. So it looks like it's a verse on Lord Shiva. Oma gyan timanandasya ginam gina shalakaya chakshur militam jinatas maya sigurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya manobhistam stapitam jina bhutale shwayam upakadamayam dadanti svapadantikam. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sya Dvaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivrindam. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Nam Hrim Shrom Om Pradom Tateka Hatika Keshika Jalat Padika Lochana Padvaraka Nakash Parsa Diva Singha Namaskate. The subject matter of today's two verses is Lord Shiva. The word, or the name, Shiva, actually means auspicious, or auspiciousness. And Lord Shiva is certainly auspicious because he is a partial manifestation of the Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna. When Krishna desires to impregnate the living entities into the material world, he does so simply by glancing at the material energy. Just like in the Bible, these inconceivable potencies of the Lord are also described. There it is stated that when the Lord wanted there to be light, all he had to do was say, "Let there be light." When we need light, we have to create a whole system. We have to take power from some natural force like the wind or the water, and we have to create the electricity and channel it to different places and turn on the switches, and then there's light. But Krishna is so amazing. He's so wonderful. His activities are achinchya, inconceivable. He can simply say, let there be light. There's light everywhere. So similarly, it is not difficult for Krishna to place all the living entities within the womb of material nature. It's described that in a corner of the spiritual sky is the Mahatattva. So the Lord is simply glancing at that material energy and is impregnating uncountable amount of living entities into the material energy. Of course, in the spiritual world there are unlimited living entities, infinite. And only a small portion, a very infinitesimal portion of the living entities from the spiritual world desire to come into the material creation. But when they do, the Lord facilitates that. He simply looks over at the Mahatattva, and by His glance, all the living entities are placed within the womb of material nature. Now technically it's said that the Lord never has contact with this material energy. He's situated in His own ecstasy in the spiritual world, and He never actually comes in contact with this miserable material world. But He has to impregnate. So impregnating the living entity obviously means some type of contact, some very intimate contact. When impregnation is there, it's a very type of intimate contact. So how does the Lord do this, that He doesn't have contact with the material energy, but at the same time He impregnates the living entities? He does this through Shiva. Actually, the glance of the Lord towards the material energy, whereby the living entities are impregnated into the womb of Durga, that glance personified as Shiva. When the Lord glances, that everything in the spiritual world is personified, nothing impersonal. So when the Lord glances, His glance personified becomes Lord Shiva. So, in that sense, Lord Shiva is a transformation of Krishna. But at the same time, He's not Krishna, because Krishna doesn't have contact with the material world. So therefore, although it's a glance of Krishna, Shiva is in a category of His own. He's not Vishnu-tattva, technically, but neither is He Jiva-tattva. He's not like you and me, tiny, marginal spirit souls. We can be influenced by the spiritual, influenced by the material, and fall down from our position. No. He is Shiva-tattva. He's in His own category. So He's simultaneously Krishna and not Krishna. So how do we understand this? Simultaneously Krishna and not Krishna. Very delicate. This subject can be discussed for hours and hours. Actually, it's been discussed for years and millenniums by great sages. The personality of Shiva. He's a very, very interesting personality. Very interesting character. Lord Shiva. So how He's Krishna and not Krishna, how is He Shiva, Shiva Shakti, Shiva Tattva? Well, the Acharyas have given the analogy of milk and yogurt. There's milk, and then you take some tamarind, or you take tamarind, and you put it in, and then the milk, overnight it turns into yogurt. So milk and yogurt are two different substances, but at the same time, they're one. They're a milk product. Milk heats the body, and yogurt cools the body. So yogurt is nothing more than a transformation of the milk. So it's a milk product, but at the same time, it's distinctly different. So Lord Shiva comes from Krishna, but He's not Vishnu-tattva, he's Shiva-tattva. Now, when the glance takes place and the Lord impregnates the living entities into the material nature through the potency of Shiva, you see, the material nature is under the control of Parvati, or Durga, and the material nature is considered to be like her womb. Now her husband is Shiva. He impregnates his wife, Durga, and this way the living entities are coming into the material world. Now after the living entities are in the material world, of course his business is not done. Because being such a powerful personality, Lord Krishna puts him in charge of the mode of ignorance. As we know, there's three modes of nature. There's goodness, passion, and ignorance. Now, Lord Vishnu, he's in charge of goodness. Brahma's in charge of passion, and Shiva is in charge of the mode of ignorance. We'll be discussing that a little later. That's not an easy service for a devotee. So, he's also in charge of the final destruction of the material world. When it comes time for the annihilation of the material cosmos, it is Shiva. He dances. He has this drum called Dindin drum. You see them if you've been to India. There's like these two-headed drums, and little kids play with them. It's got a little string with a ball attached. So Shiva, he dances. Now you could see earlier when Tatikshiva Karunika was dancing, there was some smoke coming up. Did you notice? He was actually, I don't know if the temple president has seen it, but he burned a hole in the floor. He was dancing so wildly and turning, just like Shiva, that he burned a hole. You can see it later after class, you can look. And some smoke was coming there, I saw. So, this is the principle. Lord Shiva is dancing, and by his dancing, he creates a friction which is so hot, it makes a fire which consumes the three worlds. He destroys. So he's such a powerful personality. But of course, even from that we can understand that he's not the most powerful personality. Because Prabhupada said that Lord Vishnu creates Brahma, Brahma creates, Vishnu maintains, and Shiva destroys. So Prabhupada said it's easy to start something and it's easy to destroy something, but it's really difficult to maintain something. Anyone can start some little project or whatever, and certainly anyone can destroy a project or anything that you make, you can destroy. But to maintain it, that is something difficult. You can ask Dhananjaya Prabhu. To get a nice property like this, of course, it's an exceptional thing. I'm completely amazed that there's such a wonderful, I've never seen such a wonderful facility in ISKCON. It's so wonderful. And we could easily leave it. But to maintain a project like this with 10 Sankirtan devotees, this is the mystic power of our temple president. He must certainly be empowered by Lord Krishna, by Lord Vishnu, to be able to maintain so many devotees in a big, big project like this. This takes actual, real strength. This takes spiritual strength. So this is how Prabhupada compared the three personalities, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva. Brahma creates the whole thing. Of course, he does so under the potency of the Lord. And Shiva, at the end, he just, finished. But the whole business of maintaining, which goes on for a much longer duration of time, eons and eons and eons of time, only Vishnu can do that, because he's the all-powerful, all-good personality of a Godhead. So just from this fact, we can understand the superior position of Lord Krishna. Because it's necessary to understand who is the greatest personality. Because then we can know to whom we should offer our worship. There's actually been a debate going on in India since time immemorial. Who is greater, Lord Shiva or Lord Krishna? Especially in South India. There's this debate that's been going on since time immemorial. There's even been wars. There's wars fought over, who's greater, Shiva or Krishna. Kshatriyas have gone to battle, and hundreds of thousands, if not more, lives have been lost in the battles between the worshippers of Lord Shiva and the worshippers of Lord Krishna to establish who is the supreme. Because Shiva is such an exceptional personality. Generally, we worship someone who is very, very powerful. The tendency is there, even in our modern society. If someone is extremely powerful in any particular way, in renunciation, in money, in knowledge, in strength, in fame, whatever, the tendency of the human being, because it's naturally there, we want to worship Krishna, because we're servants by nature. But when we come to the material world, that tendency is perverted, and we worship mundane personalities and mundane concepts and mundane ideals. So the tendency to worship is there. So when you hear about someone great, then you worship. Someone's greater? Oh, you worship them. Someone's greater? You worship them. Someone even greater? The tendency is to offer adoration or service to that personality. So someone hears about Lord Shiva, he may think, oh, he's so powerful. He's impregnating the living entities into the material nature. He's in charge of the mode of good, the mode of ignorance, which is all pervasive in the Kali Yuga. He's in charge of destroying this whole cosmic manifestation. If we just try to destroy one little thing like a car, it takes so much time to actually completely annihilate it. Here's a person who, by his dance, destroys everything that is known. Oh. Om Shivaya Namaha. Yes. Om Shivaya Namaha. In India, there's only one temple, at least now, dedicated to the worship of Lord Brahma. But there's so many temples dedicated to Lord Shiva. And so many people are worshipping Lord Shiva, and so many Westerners, especially young people, they go to India and they see this amazing character, Lord Shiva. He's got long hair, he's got snakes around him, he's got his trident, he's got beautiful Parvati sitting in the Himalayas, his lotus eyes, smoking ganja, smoking marijuana. See, so immediately, Om Shivaya Namaha. There on. I want to be like you. In the 1960s, you know, when Eastern philosophy and Eastern traditions were becoming popular in America, it was the beginning of the hippie thing, 65, 66, then you used to see pictures of Lord Shiva everywhere. People just really, you know, Shiva was like a hero, you know. And then, of course, Srila Prabhupada bought Krishna, and he was also very amazing. So then this, again, who is supreme, Shiva or... So actually, there were once some sages, and they wanted to understand, of these three persons, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, these amazing personalities who are beyond our abilities, tiny human beings to even comprehend, who's the greatest? Let us establish it, once and for all, of these great personalities, who is the greatest? So they asked Bhrigu Muni. He said, Bhrigu Muni, we want you to approach these three personalities and act in such a way as to cause them some disturbance. And that personality who remains the most peaceful, we can understand that he is the topmost personality. That he is unagitated by the modes of nature, that he is in the pure goodness, so he is not disturbed by anything mundane or material. So go and do something like offend them. Because everyone can remain very calm and very collected, but as soon as you're offended, oh, what? The false ego acts up. Prabhu, you did this wrong. Well, what do you mean I did it wrong? What about you? I saw one time you know, the false egos. We can remain very cool and very collected, but as soon as someone says, well, you know, well, you know. So this is the testing point, you know, of one's actual spiritual advancement, let us say, that one can take criticism or critique. So as to determine who is above anything mundane, they asked Bhrigu Muni, you go and cause some disturbance to these persons and see how they react. So Bhrigu Muni was appointed this thankless task. So first he went to his father. Now, who is the father of Bhrigu Muni? Lord Brahma. Now, when you come before your father or your superior, then naturally you pay your respects in Vedic culture. And these are all elevated personalities, so they know this civilization, this Aryan civilization. So Bhrigu Muni just walked in and he said, hi, Pita. Hi, Pita. You're not going to offer your obeisances to he who has given you this body whereby you can perform your great yajnas and your penances and austerities? No, not going to do it, Peter. So Brahma, he became very angry because Brahma is in control of the mode of passion, and sometimes he also becomes controlled by the mode of passion. Not our Brahma, because he's a pure devotee, but Brahma in principle. He became very angry. Oh, you rascal! But because it was his son, he was able to control his anger like that. So the sages were watching. Did you see how Brahma was trembling in anger? So then he went to Lord Shiva. Now, Lord Shiva is technically his brother. So Lord Shiva, when he saw Bhrigu Muni, like a brother naturally does, he ran to embrace him. Ah, my brother, my brother. And Bhrigu Muni said, oh, wait a minute. You're filthy dirty. Your body is covered by the ashes of crematorium. You've got snakes all over you, spiders, tarantulas, and scorpions. Right? Your hair, you haven't combed your hair in three millenniums. Your hair is in matted locks. And I heard that you hang out at the graveyard. Now, as a result of this, you're accompanied by so many ghastly, yucky creatures. There's ghosts and witches and hobgoblins and all those things, whatever they call them, bhutas and so forth. get away. So, but she was very, my brother, every time before you've embraced me, and now you're saying I'm dirty, you don't want to embrace me. Trident! Trident! Bhutas, bring me my trident! So Bhutas, the ghost, they brought his trident. He was just about to pierce his own brother with the trident, and Parvati said, stop. Yes, Devi. Prabhupada said that every man is too much attached to his wife. Every man is too much attached to his wife. No, not me. I'm not too attached to my wife. Actually, Birbal, he once said that to King Akbar. He said, did you know, my great Akbar, that every man is too much attached to his wife? So Akbar said, now come on, Birbal. You know, not every man. Certainly there must be some exception. And Birbal said, no exception. Absolutely no exception. So Akbar said, it's not possible. You call all the men in the kingdom and bring them here to my court. So Birbal said, okay. Something was arranged, and all the men came, all the married men came from all over the kingdom, and they were in the courtyard of the great King Akbar. So then Akbar said, your wives have all asked you to step to the other side of the courtyard. So all the men, immediately they went there. But there was one man left standing. So the King Akbar said, oh, you see, Akbar, not all the men are too much attached to their wives. So Birbal said, well, let's ask him why he's still standing there. So Birbal walked up to him and he said, you know, the king has said you should go to the other side and you should go, yes? All the other men have gone because their wives have agreed. So why have you not gone? So the man said, my wife told me not to go. So Birbal, he said, you say every man is too much attached to his wife. So King Akbar had to accept. He's your brother, Brighamuni. But actually he was trembling also. So you can see he was also so much disturbed. So next, Brighamuni, he went to the abode of Lord Vishnu. Now he defended Lord Brahma in his mind, and he defended Lord Shiva with his words. Now the worst offense is a bodily offense. There's three types of ways you can offend someone. You can offend them with your mind. I don't like you. Or you can offend them with your words. You're a rascal. Or the worst type of offense is a physical offense. Heaven forbid. So he went to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu was sitting there with Lakshmi. And you know what he did? He kicked him right in the chest. He walked right up and he gave him one of those karate kicks. You know, the first karate kick. Right in the chest. And even to this day, isn't Prahlad? He's got Lord Vishnu has the imprint of Brighamuni on his chest. That's how you can know it's Vishnu, if he's got this little imprint of Brighamuni's foot there. So, what did Lord Vishnu do? Oh, my dear Brahmana. Because Lord Vishnu, he's so indebted to the Brahmanas, because the Brahmanas are upholding Vedic culture throughout the universe. Lord Vishnu comes, as we said, once in a day of Brahman, once every few millenniums, and he, you know, preaches and gets the religious principles going. But the Brahmanas, they stay in the material world, and they uphold these religious principles on behalf of Lord Vishnu. So he's very indebted to the Brahmins. The Brahmins are always chanting his glories. The Brahmins are protecting the cows. Namo Brahmanya Devaya, Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha, Jagaditaya Krishnaya, Govindaya Namo Namaha. Brahmins and cows are very dear. Here he saw a Brahmin kick him. He said, oh, my dear Brahmana,
You've hit my very hard chest. Please give me your foot. Let me massage. Lord Vishnu wasn't the least disturbed, being situated in pure goodness. But Lakshmi, she was very upset because Rukmini had kicked her beloved Lord. So from that day forward, she's never been very inclined towards the Brahmins. And therefore, you see, the Brahmins, typically in India, the Brahmins are very poor. Of course, they keep themselves there like that. But the reason is because Lakshmi Devi's not very... She's, you Brahmana, you kicked my husband, Vishnu. I'm not going to give you very much of my opulence. So Prabhupada said that's why Brahmanas are typically poor in India, because they don't generally get the blessings of Mother Lakshmi. So in this way, the sages could determine that of these three deities, Vishnu, Brahma, and Shiva, Vishnu is supreme. And of course, because it's stated like that in Vedic scriptures. Nitya nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam, ekabahanam, yovadi dati kamam. Nitya nityanam, out of all the eternals, nitya nityanam, chaitanas chaitanam, ekabahanam, eko, there's one who's maintaining all the others. Even the devas, even Shiva, even Brahma, Vivishwan, all these powerful personalities are being maintained by one person, Krishna's. Krishna. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swaya. So even Lord Shiva is so powerful, he's dependent upon Krishna. Just like Brahma. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. I am great, but I offer my obeisances to Lord Govinda. Now this was seen in another incident. In the Ramayana, there's a huge battle at the end. You know the story of Ramayana. So there's the final battle. And Ravana is fighting with Lord Ramachandra. Now, why was Ravana so powerful? Because he worshipped Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva, he's often worshipped by these personalities because he's very merciful. He's a demigod also. So he's Ashutosh. He's fulfilling their desires if that's what they want. So sometimes great demons, they also are great devotees of Lord Shiva. So Ravana was actually powerful by the grace of Shiva, not by on his own merit. He became powerful because he was a staunch worshipper of Lord Shiva. So here's the final scene, right? He's fighting with Ramachandra, this great battle, back and forth, back and forth. And finally, you know, Lord Ramachandra's had enough. He takes his arrow out from his arrow. He draws on his bow. He's just about to shoot into the heart of Ravana. And in the heavenly planets on Mount Kailash, Parvati is sitting on the lap of Lord Shiva. And she says, "Hey, Pati, you see down there on the earth planet, your great bhakta, Ravana, is about to be killed by Lord Ramachandra. You should save him." So what does Shiva say? "Raki Krishna Mari Ke Mari Krishna Raki Ke Devi." If the Supreme Lord wants to kill someone, who can save him? If the Supreme Lord wants to save someone, who can kill him? I am not supreme. If the Lord, Ramachandra, wants to kill Ravana, what can I do? Raki Krishna Mari Ke, Mari Krishna Raki Ke. So in this way we can understand also from this, and so many other pastimes, we can understand that when it really gets down to it, you compare Shiva and Krishna, or Shiva and Ram, or Shiva, whatever, we can see that he's dependent upon the Supreme Personality of God. But at the same time, we cannot deny his greatness. Actually, in Nectar of Devotion, Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī describes that being a partial expansion of the Supreme Lord, he possesses five unique qualities like Krishna, Shiva. The first is he's changeless. The second is he's all cognizant. The third is he's ever fresh. The fourth is that he possesses an eternal, blissful body, and the fifth is that he possesses all mystic perfections. So he's unique in this sense that he has Rupa Goswami says he has these five unique qualities just like Krishna, so he's very great. But as Vaishnavas, we can appreciate his real greatness. He's great in that he's the glance of Vishnu. He's great in that, you know, he's in charge of the mode of ignorance. He's great in that he's in charge of destruction. He's great, he's a demigod. So he's great in so many ways. But as Vaishnavas, we can appreciate his actual greatness. What is the real greatness of Lord Shiva? His real greatness is that he's the humble servant of the Lord. That's great. Isn't it glorious to be a devotee of Krishna? Isn't it great to be a devotee of Krishna? It's the topmost position in the three worlds. People may think to have a lot of money is great. To be very famous is great. To have so much mundane knowledge, to have PhDs is great. What is great about that? That greatness simply makes you a fool at the end. Because you die and you take birth again like some cat or dog. All that greatness will not save you at the moment of death. It's a relative greatness. Because you die and you take birth again like some cat or dog. All that greatness will not save you at the moment of death. It's a relative greatness. What is an absolute greatness? An absolute greatness is to be a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is truly great. That is man's real glory. Our real glory has nothing to do with this material world. Our real glory is there in that we are spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna. Prabhupada said the soul is more brilliant than 10,000 suns rising simultaneously. So what does your good looks have, compared to that? What does your money compare to that? What does your puny fame, your tiny insignificant life finished in 100 years have to do with the fact that you're an eternal spirit soul in a spiritual sky? That is actually great, to be a devotee of Krishna. One time they said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you are a wonderful Vaishnava. So Prabhupada, in his humility, he said, Vaishnava. He bowed his head. He said, Vaishnava, that is a very special thing. He said, I'm trying to become a Vaishnava. I'm trying to develop the exalted qualities of a servant to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what is Shiva's real greatness? All these other things are very pale. These things that he achieves in this material world are very pale when you consider that actually he's a Vaishnava. He's a great devotee of Lord Krishna. And being a great devotee of Lord Krishna, he's in a very renounced situation. Lord Shiva is so renounced. Why is he able to keep up this supreme principle of renunciation? Having nothing to do with this material creation, no attractions to this material world, because he's completely attached to Krishna. This is the nature of a devotee. In the Padyavali, Rupa Goswami describes that the nature of a devotee. He says, O Lord, knowing you, your devotee sees the greatest river in this world as a puddle of water. Knowing you, he sees the sun as simply some firefly. Knowing you, he sees Mount Meru to be nothing more than a clump of earth. Knowing you, he sees the emperor as simply a servant. Knowing you, he sees a Chintamani jewel as simply a pebble. He sees desire trees as sticks. He sees the entire world as a bunch of straw. And he sees his own material body as simply a burden. Whatever is great in this world is insignificant in comparison to Krishna. So therefore, it's very easy for a devotee to be attached to Krishna. And whatever is in this world, a devotee, this is nothing compared to the beauty of my Lord. Oh, here's something very beautiful. Have you seen Krishna? You think this is beautiful? Have you seen Krishna? Krishna is the source of all beauty. So whatever beauty there is in this world, even you put it all together, it's only a fraction of Krishna's glories. So imagine how beautiful is Krishna. If you look at an artist's painting and you think, oh, this painting is extraordinary, imagine the mind of the artist who created that painting. So just imagine how wonderful is Krishna. So therefore, for a devotee to be renounced in this world, it's easy. Because he's attached to the beautiful Lord. So therefore we can understand that Lord Shiva is a very great devotee. His mind is always fixed on the lotus feet of Lord Shankarshan. And although he has opportunities to enjoy more than any being in the three worlds, he remains fixed on his meditation on Lord Shankarshan. Actually, he has facility to enjoy like no one else. And why? Because he's married to the personification of the material nature, Durga. Durga Devi's his wife. Right? She's his wife. And he could, from her, he could get anything he wanted. Everything could be his. But he doesn't even give Durga a house to live in. She's in charge of the whole material nature. All the houses are under her control. Everything is under her control. But she's obliged to live under a tree, you know, with Lord Shiva on Mount Kailash. One huge, huge banyan tree with all kinds of bats are there, right? Snakes are hanging from it. And scorpions are climbing around it. You know, she's just living in the dirt there with Lord Shiva, who's constantly meditating on Lord Shankarajan. He doesn't even give his wife a house. She's in charge of the whole material nature. So see what a renounced personality. One's renunciation is in some ways a symptom of one's spiritual advancement. So he's a devotee. And what's more, he's the greatest devotee. He's not just a devotee. He's the greatest devotee. And how do we know he's the greatest devotee? How do we measure the greatness of a devotee even beyond his renunciation? Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given us one criteria for understanding how great a devotee is. He says the greatness of a devotee is in his ability to make others devotees. He said the duty of a first-class man is to make a fifth-class man a first-class man. So if through your spiritual potency you can take a conditioned soul and you can influence him in such a way, help him in such a way as to give up his attachments and take up devotional service to the Lord, then you're considered spiritually powerful, spiritually pure. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said we can judge the greatness of a devotee by how many devotees he makes. So within our context, we know, we can see Śrīla Prabhupāda is the greatest devotee that this modern world has seen. Because he's made so many devotees when he was here. He's continuing to make so many devotees. And for the next 10,000 years, through his books and through his movement, he'll continue to deliver people from material existence. So Shiva falls into the same category of such a great Vaishnava. And look at the types of devotees he makes. You know, he takes Bhutas, he takes ghosts and witches and rakshasas and these type of people, and he makes them into devotees. He's in charge of the mode of ignorance. He hangs out at crematoriums. So naturally these type of people, they come around him and they associate with him. And he flies around with them. And they're always doing so much nonsense. But by his great spiritual potency, gradually they became transformed into devotees. So therefore we say he's the greatest devotee. Nimna ganam yata ganga devanam achuto yata Vaishnavanam yata sambhu puranānam idam tata. Just as the Ganga is the greatest of all rivers, Lord Achyuta, the supreme amongst deities, Lord Shiva is the greatest of Vaishnavas, and Srimad Bhagavatam is the greatest of Puranas. So Vaishnavanam yata sambhu. Sambhu means Shiva. According to Padma Purana, he is the greatest of all devotees of the Lord. So that's how we see him. And that's how we worship him. We worship Lord Shiva. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was traveling around, particularly South India, he used to go into the Shiva temples and offer his obeisance. So someone may get confused. But you Hare Krishnas say that we shouldn't worship demigods. The demigods are not on the same level as the Supreme Personality of God. And to think the names of the demigods like Brahma and Shiva are equal or independent of the name of Lord Vishnu, it's a great offense. And now you're saying that we should worship Lord Shiva. It's quite confusing. But we worship him for a different reason than most people worship him. Everyone else, except the Vaishnava, they worship him as a demigod, as a powerful personality who can fulfill one's material desires. And he plays that role also. Just like many of Krishna's devotees, they have to play roles, you know, which we may consider thankless tasks. Like his wife, Durga. She has to keep everybody in this material world. She has to tempt them to stay in this world. Even when someone is trying to become a transcendentalist, Durga has to tempt that person to test his sincerity. They have to play these roles because they're like the guards of this prison. Shiva is called Rudra, and his wife Durga is called Rudrani. What does Rudrani mean? Rudrani means one who makes you cry forever. That's Durga's name. Rudrani, she who makes you cry forever. So they have this thankless task. So one of their thankless tasks is they have to be demigods. They're not ordinary demigods like jiva tattvas. But they're, in their own right, demigods. So, you know, people pray to demigods for material blessings. Mayavadis worship demigods. Those interested in karma kanda, getting material things, they pray to demigods. So he plays his role very well. He plays his role very well for the pleasure of the Lord. Just like sometimes devotees, they also have to play the part of demons in plays. But because it's for the pleasure of the devotees and the deities, you know, we play that role very nicely. Although we're not demons, we play the role for the satisfaction of the Lord and his devotees. So Shiva is much more than a demigod. Demigods are generally jivatmas. They're souls who, conditioned souls who, due to their pious activities, have elevated themselves to heavenly planets. They've achieved such exalted positions as Indra and Vivishwan, like that, Brahma. But Shiva is not that type of demigod. He's a different type of demigod. He's Shiva Tattva. So people pray to him because he's so powerful. He's Ashutosh. It's very easy to please him and very easy to displease him. If you want to please him, in India there's these red flowers. We never offer them to the Vishnu deities, but there's these red flowers. And you just offer the flower. Hey, Shivji, now give me a wife, give me a car. He's so easy. That's why the demons, you know, they like to worship him. And that's why you see that the worshippers of Shiva are quite opulent, whereas the worshippers of Vishnu are, you know, they're not so opulent. But for a reason, of course. So you can approach him, and he will give you so much material facilities. So therefore they worship Shiva. But as devotees, we're not concerned with worshiping him like that. Because Narottam Das Thakur, he has warned us about worshipping demigods. He says, Anya Deva Shraya Tamara Kahinu Bhai E Bhakti Parama Karuna. O brother, I say to you, if you want to become a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord, do not hanker to take benedictions from the demigods. This is the instructions. Narottam Das Thakur. So, you know, to the person with the poor fund of knowledge, you'll see, oh, these materialistic people are worshipping Shiva, and you Hare Krishnas are also worshipping Shiva. You're offering your obeisances as your God did. Lord Gauranga, go to the temple. The cowherd boys, they used to also, in Vrindavan, go to Shivaratri. Or during the Shivaratri, the appearance of Lord Shiva, they would observe some special festival. So what's the difference between, you know, these people worshipping Shiva and you offering your obeisances saying he's the greatest Vaishnava? What is this? But we don't ask him for any material benedictions. We ask him only for service, and that is spiritual. That we have the right to ask. Na dhanam na janam na sundanim kavicham va jagatish kamaye mama janmani janmani ishvare bhavatat bhakti haite kitoi. Vaishnavas, we don't ask for anything material. I have no desire to accumulate wealth. Neither do I want to enjoy beautiful women. Neither do I want any followers. I don't want name and fame. No, but what do I want? What do I have the right to ask for, my dear Lord? I have the right to ask you for service, because you created me for that. The Lord was originally one, but he expanded himself as the unlimited living entities for his pleasure. Those living entities serve the Lord and give him pleasure. So we have the right, just as a servant, although he may live in the palace of the king, he can't really claim anything to be his own. He can't really ask anything, but he can ask for service because that's his constitutional position. So we can ask for service. So we can ask Lord Shiva to be engaged in Lord Krishna's service. Just like the gopis, they asked Shiva for something. They said, we want Krishna as our husband. They weren't thinking, of course, we want Krishna as our husband to satisfy our own desires. They were thinking, let Krishna become our husband so we can please him in so many different ways. This is gopis. Gopis never ask anything for themselves. They're always thinking about the Lord's pleasure. So in the mood of the gopis, because gopi bharata bharata, we're following in the mood of the gopis, many times removed, of course, but we can ask, give me some service. Actually, when we chant Hare Krishna, what are we asking? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. My dear Lord, my dear Radharani, Please engage me in Krishna's service. We're asking for service. That we have the right to ask. So we're also praying to Lord Shiva. Vaishnavanam, Vaishnavanam yata sambhu. You're the greatest devotee. You're pleasing Krishna. Please just send a drop of mercy this way. Give me also some service. Inspire me in service. We can pray like that. So we worship him. Actually, we worship him because he's our guru. He's teaching us also. Aradhananam sarvesham, Vishnu aradhanam param, tasmat paratram devi, tabiyanam samachanam. My dear Devi, although the Vedas mention worship of the demigods, the worship of Lord Vishnu is topmost. However, above the worship of Lord Vishnu is rendering of service to Vaishnavas who are related to Lord Vishnu. So he's the source of this famous verse. So, Lord Shiva ki jai. And we know that actually we can't get into the spiritual world without one final blessing of Lord Shiva. Because in his commentary to the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Jiva Goswami mentions that when the Mayavadis try to enter into the spiritual world, Lord Shiva is there. And he's got his trident. And if any Mayavadi, you know, because they're great offenders, Lord Chaitanya said the Mayavadis are the greatest offenders, they may go to the impersonal Brahman, but in wandering around the impersonal Brahman, they hear the glories of Vaikuntha. They think, ah, I want to go there and enjoy. There's unlimited enjoyment in Vaikuntha. The enjoyment of Vaikuntha compared to the enjoyment here is unlimited. So they think, I will try to go into Vaikuntha. So if the Mayavadis try to go into Vaikuntha, there's Lord Shiva with his trident. And he hurls his trident at the Mayavadis and he knocks them back down into the material world where they become little diamonds and they emit a little effulgence and they think, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, Aham Brahmasmi, I have become absolute. Yes, they become like little diamonds. You know, diamonds are naturally, they're sparkling. So the Mayavadi being hurled down by the trident of Lord Shiva at the gates of Vaikuntha, he falls in this world, he becomes a little diamond. Oh, now look, Aham Brahmasmi, I am spirit, I've become supreme. So we need his blessings, his final, okay. So, who are you? Krishna Das. Yes, what do you want? Eternal service, hit the Lord's lotus feet. Are you bringing any material desires with you? No, sir. No dhanam, no janam, no sundarim. Kavitam va jakshakim. Kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani, janmani, ishvara, bhavatad bhakti. I only want service. Come in, you're welcome. Hare Krishna. And Lord Shiva, he wanted also to go to Goloka Vrindavan. Actually, because so many great sages, he's associating with so many great sages like Narada Muni and people like this, and they know the topmost position, which is, you know, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has informed us, the greatest service, the greatest servants of the Lord are the gopis of Vrindavan. So like one time Lakshmi, she wanted to become gopi. So Shiva also, he was thinking one time, I'd like also to become gopi. Here he is, you know, with his snakes and his, you know, he's got his tiger skin around his, you know, waist and, you know, he's got his trident and, you know, the ghosts are there and he's thinking, I also want to become gopi. I've heard so much about these gopis, I want to become gopi. So what he did is he went to the outskirts of Vrindavan, Sri Vrindavan Dham. For a long time, he performed great penances and austerities. Oh, he's just meditating. So for such a long time, he was there, just on the outskirts of Vrindavan. So the residents used to see, who is this character there with matted hair and bluish and snakes? And so then Purnamasi, she took a little compassion. She said, what are you doing? Oh, gopi, 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 gopi. I want to become gopi. You want to become gopi? Yes, I want to become gopi. Okay, I'll give some special mercy. You can become gopi now. So, with her, you know, mystical powers, she changed Lord Shiva into a gopi. Oh, very nice. But he was in such a hurry, he ran off, you know, into the village, you know, where the gopis were all doing their services for Krishna. And he didn't take any further instruction from Purnamasi because, you know. So he got there and he was sitting and, you know, Hare Krishna, big beautiful lotus eyes, and, nice earrings and beautiful sari. And he's just amazed. Oh, Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, oh, I made it. So the gopis, they're like village girls. The girls like to talk, socialize, you know. So the gopis all come from particular villages, and they have particular families. And they're known, they're famous for this particular family, this particular village. And they all have a particular service which they render to Krishna. Some gopis, they just make sweet rice. Some gopis, they make chandan. All day long, they're happy. They're not thinking, oh, I have to do something. This is their perfection. They make it so perfectly that when Krishna puts the chandan on, he goes, thank you very much. And gopis melt. Oh, Krishna. And some gopis, they're playing harmonium. Some gopis are playing tambura. Some gopis are making garlands like that. Each gopi has a particular unique talent or art by which she pleases Krishna eternally. So the gopis are doing the different things, and Lord Shiva is just sitting there, Hare Krishna. So the gopi said, oh, you're so beautiful, gopi. We've never seen gopi so beautiful as you. What village do you come from? He couldn't say Mount Kailash because... So he said, what village? Krishna, Krishna. So then gopi said, they said, who are your parents? Hare Krishna. And what unique art do you please our beloved Shamsundar with? So immediately they could realize, because he didn't take any information. Purnamasi was going to tell him all these things, give him some information where he could, you know, be with the gopis, but he was just too impatient to get there. So they beat him up. The gopis started beating him. You're an imposter, get out of here. They ripped his sari off, his choli, everything, out! So Lord Shiva, he ran back out. Poor Mother Purnamasi. Oh, poor Lord Shiva, I'm sorry. She said, but I'll give you one blessing. She said, you can stay here forever on the, just here at the perimeter of Vrindavan, and you can be Gopishwara. You can be the protector of the gopis. You can be the protector of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So actually, he performs this very wonderful service, Lord Shiva also. And this is how we think of Lord Shiva, actually. We think of him in all his capacities, but we see him as the dearmost servant of the Lord, as the greatest devotee of the Lord. And we see him that he has this wonderful service for Sri Vrindavan Dham, and he's the protector of the Dham. And actually, when you go to India, and you go to Vrindavan, then there's one temple in Vrindavan. It's called Gopishwara Mahadev. Gopishwara Mahadev. And there's the deity of Lord Shiva. And I think, is it one? No, every day they dress him in the evening. Every day they dress him as a gopi. And the first time I went, you know, to this temple, I didn't know all these pastimes. And I went there and I'm thinking, what is going on here? This is a deity of Shiva. He's dressed as a gopi. This must be some aprasambhadaya, some speculators or something, you know. This is crazy. So then I went out and stubbed my toe. I had a big cut on my toe. But later I learned this is a bona fide temple because this is a temple where this pastime is honored, this pastime is glorified, that Lord Shiva is the protector of the Dham. And actually, recently, within the last 2 years, there's another makeshift temple. It's actually becoming a temple now in the Parikrama Tail. You go around the Parikrama Tail, it's somewhere past Keshi Ghat, and you get around the other side there before you get into the forest part of the Namaha, Om Shivaya, Namaha. They've taken a vow to chant Shiva's name something like 130 trillion times or something. So you hear, you know, some incredible amount of time. So even at the Krishna Balaram Mandir, which is maybe 6 kilometers, or you hear in the morning, you hear, oh, some lady, Om Shivaya Namaha. She's getting tired. Om Shivaya. Om Shivaya. You see, but the Shiva temple's not only tolerated, it's appreciated because he's Gopishwara Mahadev. He's the protector of the holy Dham. So next time you go to Vrindavan, in the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, don't forget to go to the Gopishwara Mahadev temple and offer your respected obeisances to this exalted Vaishnava, Lord Shiva.
Lord Shiva Mahadeva ki, Shiva Prabhupada ki, Grantara Shima Bhagavatam ki, Gaur Premanandi. Hare Krishna. Okay. So what is the program today? We're going to go on Harinam? Okay. Well, it won't rain if we go out there and we chant. No, it rains if you chant, if you do the yoga. Anyway, it can work either way. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare. Actually, it works both ways, because from the sacrifice, the rains are coming in, the grains, and then we get our food stuff. But also, we read in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya said this chanting is so powerful. He would chant, and the clouds would go the other way. He'd chant, Hare Bo, Hare Bo. So either way, so hopefully if we go out. Anyway, singing in the rain. Anyway, we'll take all our little umbrellas and we'll chant. So that'll be after prasadam. Okay. All right. Harinam Sankirtan ki. Shishi Lakshminarasinghadev ki. Gaur Premanandi.